There was one of them from Agape Land and one of Fruit of the Spirit and things like that. And they had one song in there that had a chorus that said, "Love keeps forgiving the mistakes we make in living. Everybody needs a lot of love." So it's love's way to maintain unity. And no relationship anywhere will thrive without some forgiveness, because there's so many mistakes we all make in that area. So we also mentioned this morning that others are holding us accountable. From Matthew 18, like we read this morning, when the other slaves saw what had taken place, they were deeply distressed and went and reported to their master everything that had happened. So again, that was just from this morning. How about this one? We mentioned this morning also, is that there's a penalty for not forgiving. The unforgiving servant was actually turned over to the jailers, and he was forced to pay everything he was not able to pay before, and he had to come up with the answer. So this is one of those scary verses in the Bible that kind of brings and cuts the fog for me. This is not a gray area sort of verse. This really gets right to it. We talked about seeing forgiveness in terms of debts. Well, in the Lord's Prayer, we're asked to pray and forgive us our debts as we have forgiven our debtors. But just a couple verses down from that, Jesus says, "I'm going to explain this a little bit further for you." That was the model prayer. Now, let me give you some explanation. "For if you forgive people their wrongdoing, your heavenly Father will forgive you as well. But if you don't forgive people, your Father will not forgive your wrongdoing." So it's said more than once in the Scripture, Jesus points out that it is a requirement for our own forgiveness, that if we don't forgive. How about this one? This one we didn't mention this morning. But what's the sixth commandment say? Anybody know? That's thou shalt not murder. And when Jesus was explaining that passage in the Sermon on the Mount, he went on to say it's not so much just murdering. It's just having even an angry and bad attitude at somebody that can get you in trouble. If you call somebody a fool, that's even enough to be put into prison for murder. So Jesus was saying that it's not just the physical act of killing somebody. That's what the sixth commandment is prohibiting. It's actually being angry enough to call somebody a name or getting frustrated with them. So we need to think of ways where we can avoid breaking the sixth commandment, and it even starts in the heart where we need to forgive and not let anger even get the best part of us. So forgiveness is part of that reconciliation process that keeps you from violating the sixth commandment. How about this one? Be imitators of God. The imitators of God. Ephesians 5:1 says, "Therefore, be imitators of God as dearly beloved children." And so we've been trained. We are Bible study scholars ourselves here. Whenever we see the word "therefore," we ask ourselves, what is the "therefore" there for? Well, just back up one verse and you'll find out. Ephesians 4:32 in the prior chapter says, "And be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as God also forgave you in Christ. Therefore, be imitators of God." So there's another reason why we forgive. It's being an imitator of God. In Exodus chapter 34, 6 and 7, it says, "Then the Lord passed in front of him and proclaimed, 'Yahweh, Yahweh is a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and rich in faithful love and truth, maintaining faithful love to 1,000 generations, forgiving wrongdoing, rebellion, and sin.'" And of course, in the prodigal son is a model of the Father, the Heavenly Father. And he was a very forgiving father in that parable. And what was the problem with the other son? He was not a very forgiving son, was he? Luke chapter 23 and verse 34, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them because they do not know what they are doing." That was what Jesus' words from the cross there. Another reason why to forgive is what gives you the right. What gives you the right? This is kind of a subtle one, but when you bring an accusation of wrongdoing against somebody, do you really have the right to do that? Even Satan is going to be challenged if he tries to bring an accusation against us. If somebody's done something wrong to us, to make an accusation back to that person that you've sinned or you've violated some commandment or you've hurt me or something like that, we're going to have to be really careful about that. We might not know the whole truth. We might not know the whole picture and be able to make a judgment like that. So remember that we might not really have the right to make such a big claim that this person has offended us. So we need to forgive there. How about this one? This one is also one that I've discovered a lot in my own life. is that it's for your own personal sanctification. Some of the biggest struggles you're going to have in your life are with people. And people are going to make mistakes, and people are going to goof, and your ability to forgive them and go on with life is really part of your dependence upon God and your ability to keep going and your ability to work together and maintain your unity and your composure. Some of the biggest troubles I've had in my life have been problems I've had with other people, and mostly it's been my fault, but that's what's helped me to grow. It's what's helped me to actually become better at the life that God's given me here, is to seek Him during those troubled times and find the peace of God in those difficulties and learn from it and grow from it. Your personal sanctification is going to be blessed by the people in your life. And the last one, why forgive? Who has been forgiven more anyway? We touched upon this a little bit this morning, but Jesus Christ forgave us a huge, immeasurable, unfathomable depth of debt that we just can't even imagine. It was so large. It was we calculated it out from the slave owed 10,000 talents of money or something, and that was in the trillions of dollars, and it probably even meant in unimaginable volumes of money, because the word thousand in the Greek was their largest word in their vocabulary. And so by saying 10,000 talents, he might have just been saying, you know, it's just a debt that was unpayable, period. Even if he owed a talent, it would have been unpayable. But 10,000 talents is unpayable. So who's been forgiven more? We have been forgiven by God so much more than all those little debts that we kind of tally up and say, people have offended me and they owe me a payment and they should be doing this and this to get me paid back. Well, we should just forgive all that. Christ has forgiven us so much more. So much more. Let's go on to recognizing the need to forgive. And again, we touched upon this a little bit this morning. And this is some stuff I got from the book Kim loaned to me. That was from Healing for Damaged Emotions. And he has these tests. And the first one is the resentment test. If you've got a resentment, a feeling of resentment in your life, there's a good chance that you have a difficulty with forgiveness with that person. It just is, that's the emotion that takes over inside of us that we feel when a relationship has been damaged by an offense. We just call it resentment. We don't want to be with the guys that hurt us. We don't want to be around the people that are breaking our relationships. We resent them. If you've got resentment in your life, then that's probably a good test that you've got a bitterness or a forgiveness issue. So if you ever avoid that person, give them the silent treatment. If you ever bear a grudge, those are all similar things to resentment. Have you ever had trouble looking the person in the eye? That's a sign that maybe there's a problem with their relationship. If you cannot rejoice with anything good that happens to that person, you know, if you hear some news that this person just got a raise and you go, oh, rats, you know, that's probably because you were secretly, quietly in your mind praying, I hope that guy loses his job. Well, if something good happens and you can't rejoice with that person in their life, then there's probably a resentment problem in your life there. Sometimes you might even get a kick out of some of the hearing news that something bad happened to them. And you just kind of say, yeah, Lord, that's right. He owed me big time and you're taking it out on him for me. I appreciate that. Thank you, Lord. Well, that's not good either. That's a sign that you probably have a resentment problem. Don't do that. If you have trouble with those, having joy with them or even like it when they fall, then that's a bad sign. If you cannot pray sincerely for that person's blessing, now that is a really good test to know whether your heart is right. If you just say, I'm going to pray that that person is blessed in whatever they do, and you have trouble kind of getting that out of your mouth, that's probably a sign that you've got a resentment problem, and there's some forgiveness that has to be done. You know, the biggest resentments, unfortunately, are going to be with some of the closest people in your life, because they're the people that you are most vulnerable with, and so watch out for that. If there's close people in your life, there's going to be some even harder resentments than you've ever faced before. So watch out for that. If you do resent somebody, then thank God that the warning sign went off in your life and you can do something about it. Because the experience I gained from my own problems and from the books that Kim helped me to borrow is that people that bear resentment for a long, long time and don't deal with it effectively become basket cases. It eats away at the inside of their lives and their emotions, and they just turn into emotional wrecks. And so if you feel that resentment, thank God and say, oh, thank you, Lord, for showing me that I've been offended. Let me start dealing with that process right now. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, tips of how to forgive, making forgiving easier. The second test that came up in Kim's book was this blame game. It's a subtle but even similar technique to the first one with resentment. But if you find yourself blaming somebody else for your problems that you're having, then perhaps you're kind of pointing the finger and you're not really taking responsibility yourself. If you've said something like, well, if that person wouldn't have gotten a line in front of me, I would have had the last, something like that. Well, you're just expressing a disappointment that might actually be worse than a disappointment. It might be a resentment. So watch out for that. We're studying the creation story in my Sunday school class, and we talked about Adam and Eve last week, and of course, God goes to Adam and says, Adam, what have you done? And Adam says, oh, Lord, I've sinned. I've ate the fruit. Please forgive me. I apologize. I'm sorry I did all that. No. He said, this woman you gave me, she's the one that did it. She's the one that's made all these problems. And you're the one that made the woman, God. So it's not my fault. It's the woman's fault, and it's your fault. And that's the blame game. You're having a resentment issue there if you're doing that. Passing the buck for the failures and missed opportunities for your destiny. Those are all problems that could run into resentment. It burns just a little bit cooler than resentment, but it can be the same issue. You need to forgive and say, hey, that was a situation that was in God's hands. It was out of my control. I don't need to blame somebody for it. And we talked about this one this morning, too, the reminder test. The reminder test is also kind of subtle, and I've had this in my life before. There was a kid in my life growing up. His name was John Benson. And in my town, when I was growing up, there was only a couple Bensons in the whole town. And there was a kid down the street named John Benson. And he was a bully. He was mean. He was ignorant. He was difficult. Nobody liked him. I played with him a few times and always just hated it. And so I never liked this guy. And I think he turned out to be a better kid after he grew up a little bit later. But I still was kept with this idea that this John Benson was just in the back of my mind was somebody I just could not stand. And when we moved to Rochester, there's a lot more Bensons in Rochester, by the way. When we moved to Rochester, there was this kid who came over to our house to play in the backyard. I said, hi, what's your name? And he says, oh, my name's John Benson. And I could not place it. But for some reason, as soon as he said that name, I just did not like this kid. It was just something in me that's just flipped. And I couldn't understand what is it about. I couldn't even remember this 40 years ago in my childhood where this name came from. But the name triggered something in me, and I resented this kid. He was just a little 6-year-old, 7-year-old guy playing in my yard, and it was amazing. But I finally got down to the bottom of that and remembered that, oh yeah, John Benson is a name of somebody I had in my past childhood who I did not like, and that was it. And it took me all the way back, and I was able to take care of that a lot better after that. But that's a reminder test. If something reminds you of something that you had going on, maybe there's a resentment there, maybe there's a difficulty that you need to resolve and take care of, and forgiving is probably the way to do that. Another one I had was Craig. I had a kid that was named Craig, and from that time on, everybody I met that was named Craig was already a notch down. That was it. So I like Craigs. Craigs are fine. So the reminder test is a good test. And the last one I've got here for a test is the reaction test. David Siemens' book, he puts these reminder tests and the reaction test together. It's three tests. And so I just split them out and made them four tests because this one is also kind of important to me. A lot of times you'll be snappy and quick and react with anger or meanness to somebody, and it's because you're taking it out on the wrong person. You've probably got a bad relationship going on over here, and you're snapping at somebody over here. You're having a bad reaction to somebody, and it's really not their fault. They're going to go, what'd I do? And you're going to say, well, just don't do that again. You're going to run away and try to figure out what happened. But a lot of times what happened is you've got a bad relationship going on with somebody else, and you're taking it out on the wrong person. So watch out for the reactions. If you give somebody a bad reaction, sit down and say, "Ooh, why did I snap so hard at that person? I bet you I've got something I need to figure out and resolve. I need to go back and understand that. Have I got something I need to forgive? Have I got something I need to work out?" Has anybody here ever seen the movie? It's actually a TV movie called 12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men. It was a real movie. Okay. It was not a made-for-TV movie. Okay. It was a real movie, 12 Angry Men. I just love the drama in that movie. It's 12 men who are in a jury, and they're trying to examine the evidence for the conviction for murder of this young boy who has been accused of murdering his father. And the movie brings out all these personalities of the jurors that are going on. And one by one, this one juror is able to convince everybody that there's doubt. There's doubt. There's doubt about the murder of this, the guilt of this one guy. But one guy holds out to the very end, and he just says, "Ah, this guy is guilty. I know it. He's got to be guilty." And at the very end, he pulls out a picture of his son and tears the picture of his son apart into pieces. And he just dawns on him suddenly that he's had resentment against his son and his son walking out and leaving him. And he was taking it out on this boy. He wanted to convict this boy of murder, to take it out on his son. And that is the same sort of reaction test here. If this guy was using this whole jury situation to get back at his son when he really, you know, all this time he thought he loved his son, but his resentment was with his son. So that's the reaction test. Okay, here comes the fun part. Here comes the fun part. Tips on how to forgive. Tips on how to forgive here. This is where, if you've got some ideas, I'd love to hear them, because this is where we can all help each other figure out some ideas here. We mentioned this morning, see offenses as debts. Boy, that helps me a lot. If I just sit there and say, what does this person really owe me? What crime has he committed? So many times I figure out that the crime he committed is that he didn't ask me first. You know, that should be the silliest one in the book. And we're going to mention that one later. Or what's the crime he has committed? And if you can figure out what crime he's committed, what debt he owes, it takes it out of the emotional realm of I feel offended or I feel resentment. And you can take it out of the I feel world and take it into the there's a debt somebody owes me. Where did that debt come from? Why do I feel that person owes me something? That analysis really can get you a head start on figuring out how to forgive better. A lot of times you'll find out, well, the reason I forgive is because I was just the silly person in this situation, and I can forgive that pretty easily. All right. That really helps me out. And we mentioned this morning as well. You don't need to apologize first. A lot of people, they wait and they won't apologize to somebody, or they won't forgive somebody until that somebody comes and just begs and says, "Oh, I was such a rotten person to you, and I just want you to forgive me." Well, a lot of the times that's not going to happen. People have, in the past, had resentment against somebody. That person will never forgive them because they've died. And they still live with resentment against a dead person who's never going to apologize. So get over it. There's a reason for this. We need to forgive even before the person has apologized. We need to be willing to forgive even before the person apologizes. Now, there's going to be times when that person is going to, for their own sanctification, is going to want to apologize, of course. But you don't need to wait for an apology to start forgiving. You need to forgive right away so you can get that off your chest and get going. I have had so many cases where I have forgiven a person that's hurt me and started acting in restoration and love, and they then realize that the thing I did didn't break the relationship, and it makes it freer for them to apologize. Now, if you just sit there and suddenly put up a big barrier and it's the Hatfields and the McCoys right away, and they won't apologize because they're afraid to even come near you. But if you can just start the forgiving process right away and break down that barrier, start showing restoring love up front, then they're probably going to apologize even much more earnestly and much more quickly. So there's two tips for you. Here's another one. One of my favorites is be understanding. Be understanding. What this means is I was offended by this situation, this relationship or something like that, but I probably don't understand everything that was going on. I might have misunderstood something. I might have heard it wrong. I don't know the whole picture. I don't have it on a tape recorder. I can't go back and replay it. I don't know everything about all that was happening. I really shouldn't take this so seriously. So be understanding. On the surface, it appears that a relationship has taken a hit on the surface, but underneath, there's something else that's going on. And so try to understand what that something else is. And it's not just that you were offended. Maybe there's something deeper. And try to look for the understanding in this all. Going to seek to understand the whole picture before you let your feelings take over. If you're starting to feel resentment, stop it right there and just say, oh, well, maybe it's not legitimate that I'm feeling resentful because I don't understand everything that took place just now. Let me go back over this and see if I can't understand it better. The book of Proverbs, I love the book of Proverbs, and I find it quite amazing that the book of Proverbs links understanding and wisdom and knowledge so closely together. And we are just commanded throughout the book of Proverbs to seek understanding. That is a huge benefit for us. Proverbs 2:6, for the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 3:13, happy is the man who finds wisdom and who acquires understanding. Proverbs 4:5, get wisdom, get understanding, do not forget or turn away from the words of my mouth. Proverbs 4:7, wisdom is supreme, so get wisdom, and whatever else you get understanding. Proverbs 5:1, my son, pay attention to my wisdom, listen closely to my understanding. Proverbs 4:7, say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your relative. Proverbs 8:1, doesn't wisdom call out? Doesn't understanding make her voice heard? And Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. It is something we are just commanded to get, understanding. Just try to see the biggest picture possible whenever you're in any situation, and in relationships that really comes in handy. Right along beside, be understanding is be humble. Don't be offended. If you're humble, you're not going to be offended easily. I can just guarantee it. There's thousands and thousands of ways that our prides can get hurt and that our egos can get bent out of shape if we're not humble. But the humble person is going to have a lot of trouble getting upset or offended. So be humble. Love is not selfish, 1 Corinthians 13:5. Love is not selfish, and love is not provoked. So not be humble, and you won't be easily provoked that way. How about this one? Be less assuming. This is one of my favorite ones that's come in handy for me a lot. It's come in handy for me a lot. There is a Jewish proverb, and many of you have heard me say this before. There's a Jewish proverb that says, don't attribute to malice what can be explained by ignorance. What that means is that you've just had an event with a situation with somebody, and they've hurt you. And our first thought through our head is, that person was so mean. That person was so... he was out to get me. He was trying to hurt me. And the chances are more likely that the person wasn't trying to hurt you. And I've discovered that most of the time when there's those difficult situations, that person probably came to you after 10 or 15 minutes of prayer, praying explicitly that they would not offend you, they would not hurt you. And if something happened to slip out that sounded mean, well, it probably wasn't the best assumption to assume that they were being mean. It's better to assume that they were just not fully understanding the situation. They might not have understood what their words meant to you. They might not have understood what was going on. You know, I can't remember a single meeting of minds where we sat around strategizing on how to hurt somebody. But in the church, we hurt people all the time. You know, we always do that. We always pray before we do things. We always try to seek the Lord so that we can minimize the impact that's going to have on people's hurts and their sensitivities. So be less assuming. Don't assume people are trying out to kill you and out to hurt you and out to damage you and out to offend you. They don't wake up in the morning saying, I can't wait to figure out a way to hurt that guy. They don't do that. Most of the time they wake up saying, I don't want to hurt anybody today, Lord. But if it happens, assume that it was because it just happened. And on the flip side of that one is be less sensitive. A lot of times people joke. A lot of times people banter. At IBM, there's a group of guys down the hall from me, and they banter up a storm. I mean, they say things to each other. You would think that they just hate each other. But that's become kind of their way of playing with each other, is bantering. You know, well, here comes that Biggest Loser. Ha, ha, ha. You know, and they don't mean, you know, what their words say. They just mean to kind of jab a little bit and get a reaction. And then they kind of settle down and it's the morning. That's how they get to know each other in the morning. Again, they go out for coffee and have a good time. So be less sensitive. People are going to joke. People are going to banter a little bit. And to be honest, there are a few folks whose personalities are not really well equipped to say soft, sensitive, kind things. And they still want to do something to show you that they're your friend. And so they might slap you on the back and say something, you know, that's a little bit like a banter. And that might just be the best chance they've got to say something nice to you. And they haven't got the ability to just look you in the eye and say, man, I really appreciate being your friend. Man, I really care for you. But they might be able to better say, you know, did you have a nice trip, you know, or something like that when you fell down or something. So just be less sensitive. It's going on all around you. Be less sensitive. I don't know if you guys have ever met Texans. I don't know, probably this is a stereotype here, I'm sure. I mean, you've got to be careful. But Texans are gushy. They are gushy kinds of fellowshippers. You know, they just are so sweet. And I've met so many Texans, and they are so nice and so sweet. And they come up to Minnesota and they say, how come you guys are all so cold and so heartless and so insensitive? It's the weather, you know. Minnesotans are so cold. I've heard that over and over again. Minnesotans are so cold. But Texans are just used to that. That's more like their personality. They like to gush and flow with it. So be less sensitive. It's gonna go easier. You won't be offended as often if you're less sensitive. I knew I was going to get in trouble on that one. Okay, some more tips. This is number 7. This one I got from David Sundin. I see Julie back there. This one I got from David Sundin, and it has worked for me amazingly well. So thank you, David. Sometimes folks, especially youth, I found this most helpful for my youth, will use comments with a poor choice of words. They're trying to express their emotions, they're struggling with what they're trying to say, and they can't really say it very well, and so something just kind of flies out of their mouth. And we are masters of the human language. And we know the connotations of every word. We know the subtle nuances of every syllable and the way it's pronounced. And we analyze that thing that just came out of their mouth. And we don't hear words. We hear attitude. And we hear them dissing us. We hear them saying the wrong thing. And we analyze it, and it's being overanalyzed. The chances are the guy chose the wrong word, or whoever you're talking with was just trying to get out of an answer that will get you off their back, and so they say the wrong thing. And it's so helpful just to throw that one out and say, I don't even think I ever heard that one. I'm just going to ignore that one entirely. Take that comment, just strike it from the record. It didn't happen. And that is so much better. You can go on and you can start having a very nice conversation with whoever you're talking with just by ignoring that one. Just throw it out. It's helped me with my kids a lot. Just consider it a disqualified statement. If it really carries a lot of heavy language with it, then just say, let's keep this on a more intellectual level and just throw that one out, and we'll pick another question and answer that might sound a little better and be a little bit easier to handle. So choose to ignore certain comments is one of my favorites, and it saved me a lot of grief. This one you've heard before: walk a mile in their moccasins. Some people, you know, are hurt or offended, and they might mean it. They might mean it. But truly, their life has been really shaken by something. And if you were to sit back and take over and sit in their shoes and see life from their perspective, their frustration, they're probably just taking out on you. And you might just be the end of, you might be, get, they're actually being mean to you or bitter or harsh with you, and it's because they're just having a really tough day. They're just, you know, write it off as being just kind of a mood they're in, and just excuse them for a while from the harshness of it, and you won't feel as offended. Now, I don't want you to go into every conversation patronizing and trying to be condescending towards them or anything like that, but just understand that it could be something bad. And I have this story I like to tell, where there was one time I used to do the count for the church and keep records for the giving. And I had a killer of a headache, just a monster headache. And I was at church, it was a Sunday evening, and somebody came up to me, it's not anybody that was here, somebody came up to me and said, you know, Jim, I just don't understand. We gave on the second Tuesday of December, right here, you know, and you've got zero there. And I had this huge headache, and I went, let me see that. I looked at their little giving record, and at the top it said, giving record for January 1st through November 30th. And I said, right at the top here it says, this is only through the end of November. You probably did give in December, but it's just not on here. And when I said that with this headache in my head and that sigh that I was trying to compose myself, what the message was sent was, you idiots. You know? And after I got done with the conversation and the way they treated me for the couple weeks after that, I just knew I really, really offended them. You know, so if you can kind of walk a mile in their moccasins and think, well, maybe they're just having a huge bad day, and then this was kind of just a reaction that I got because of something that's going on in their life, it'll go a mile to not even being offended by the situation. There's a lot of explanations for why somebody might offend you and you get the wrong meaning for it. Okay, let's move on here. Hope you're thinking of some ones that I'm not going to hit here. This is another one of my favorite ones. Don't depend on nonverbal cues. We talk a lot with body language, with gestures, with tone of voice going up and down to express ourselves. But the truth is, there's really no dictionary for body language. There's no grammar. You don't go to school and have, you know, ninth grade English body language class. There's no set standard of the way people just gesture and use their inflections and their voices right. And you can misread body language cues pretty easily. And you might hear the words coming out of their mouth say one thing, but you're getting the facial expression and you're getting the body language. It might mean something entirely different. So be really careful of that. If you're getting conflicting messages from the words and the body language, I'd recommend you just kind of throw the body language out. Take the face value of the words that you're getting and use that to go in for the next question or ask for clarification. But don't assume that just because they're giving you some body language that you're not interpreting correctly, don't assume that means they hate you or they're trying to offend you or they're responding back to you some way. That's just something that'll help you out. So don't depend on those nonverbal cues. Here's one that I've run into several times. Some personalities are just plain offensive. You know, everybody in this room has a different personality. There's a variety of us all here, and we're all at different levels of sanctification in our lives. We're growing in our image of Christ. And we're all struggling to become better. I can just promise you, everybody in this room wants to wake up tomorrow better than they were today. But there's just going to be times when personalities are going to mismatch each other. And just face it, don't get upset and don't get mad. This person might say something that offends you, but maybe it's just step four on their step six lesson that's going to take this week through this education process. So don't be offended by personalities. I got to tell you another story. There was a guy at IBM, and he was a big talker. He was right about everything. He had an opinion about everything. And if you started discussing anything with him, he would come right out and tell you the lowdown on everything that was going on and just tell you how to solve all your problems. And he just knew it all. And when he explained things, he would even add just a little barb on the end, like, you know, whoever wrote this code was probably like an ignoramus. You know, and that's not very subtle, but he had a lot more of them that were really subtle. And he'd always throw in that little commentary on a lot of things. And by the time you're done, you could just feel like this guy was really insulting you. And it was just really hard to take this guy. And then it dawned on me, this is his personality. He doesn't know he's sending those barbs. He's just oblivious to all that. And he does that with everybody. I listened to him talk with other people, and he was doing it. I heard a conversation down the hall he was having with somebody else, and that other person was having the same difficulty I had with the guy. And it was going everywhere. So I just wrote it off as his personality. And after that, I could get along with him just so well. Nobody could understand how I could like this guy and nobody else could. But I liked him. I just ignored all that. It was just part of his personality. I didn't take that message personally that he was sending. Well, no surprise to any of you, but down in the lab one night, he got in a fist fight with somebody and was fired on the spot, just like that. And I could just play it over my head exactly what probably happened. He irritated one guy way too much, and it got in trouble. Human Resources actually interviewed me to get a personality profile for this guy on how to deal with this situation of having fired him on the spot. And I explained the same story to him, and they were so happy to hear what I told them because they correlated with everything else they were getting from other people. But I was the only person they had found so far that had been able to get over the personality. Everybody else was caught with it. So watch out for offensive personalities. They're out there. They're just people growing. And by all means, pray for them and help them over some of those issues if you can. But don't let them be your offense in your life and cause a problem with resentment or anything like that. Okay, moving along here pretty well. Let's go on to the next one. This is number 11. This is my favorite church trap, the my way trap. There are so many times in my life where the only crime somebody has committed against me is that they didn't do it my way. If they only would have asked me, I would have told them my opinion. If they would have followed my advice, it all would have worked out. They didn't take my advice. They either didn't ask for it, or they didn't take the advice I gave them. And now they have violated the probability of having utopia on earth. You know, I could have resolved this whole problem if they would have just taken my advice. And now they've done it. And now I resent that person because they didn't ask me. They made that decision without me, and they didn't ask me. And now I'm going to be mad. I have lived with that so many times, and I finally am catching myself now. I think Bill might remember this, but years and years ago, when we were on a pastor search committee, we did a survey, and one woman wrote in, I think it was a woman, wrote in that at Emmanuel Baptist Church, there are too many chiefs and not enough Indians. And what that means is that everybody wants to be a leader and nobody wants to be a follower. And it's very important that we get this through our heads, that when people make decisions and they didn't ask you, they haven't committed a crime. They haven't committed a crime. Most of the time, the decisions that are made are by people who have been given the authority through the nominating committee to make the decisions that they make, and it's not part of their job to go poll everybody on the planet to figure out what the right thing to do is. So, if you don't like the decisions that are made by somebody who's in leadership, run for the office next time, and you can make those decisions. But in the meantime, enjoy their chance to get a opportunity to lead in the church and be a part of God's kingdom. Some people that get into positions of leadership, it's the first time they've ever been there. They might goof up and make a couple decisions and forget to ask you. And that's just going to be okay. There have been very few bad decisions that have resulted in disaster. Most of them have just resulted in people being offended. So don't be offended by people that don't take your way about doing something. So, and the last one. Practice saying, I will forgive. Just say it over in your heart several times. I will forgive. This problem has offended me, but I will forgive. I may not feel like forgiving now. I may not want forgiving now, but just say it. I will forgive. And I can promise you that God will provide all the rest. He always does for me. He has always come through. I remember my grandmother telling me one time, that you can forgive without being able to forgive because Jesus will do the forgiving through you. He will do the loving and the restoring through you. And you can forgive when Jesus Christ provides the extra power. But he can't do it until you at least say, I will forgive. I will forgive. And that's the secret to it all. So I will forgive. God is an expert on forgiveness, and he will help you. And whatever you can't do, he will make up the difference as long as you're willing to say, I will forgive. Okay, those are my 12 points. Did anybody think of some other good techniques while we were going through those that you want to mention before we quit? I'm sure you guys have run into some bumps before and had ways of dealing with it. Any ideas come to your mind? Yeah, Gail.
Just